Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DH case I'm known. And a jam-packed week this week, there are five things up for review, starting off with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which is the latest film in the Ghostbusters franchise. Then there's the 2024 remake of Roadhouse. There's the Sydney Sweeney nunnery-set horror film Immaculate. Then there is another horror film, which is shocking if you listen to this podcast often, called Late Night with the Devil. And finally, the new Kristen Wiig comedy on Apple TV Plus called Palm Royale. First up is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, and I want to say this is the newest film in the Ghostbusters franchise, and, you know, chronologically, certainly the newest, but is there anything new about this film? That is arguable. And I struggle with the idea of these fan service related films, right? Because, you know, on the one hand, I get frustrated by our inability as consumers and the producers of these things to get away from characters who've already been established and spending all this money versus, you know, telling news stories. Because for the budget of this film, how many independent films could you have financed that are bringing stories that we've never at all seen before to life on the screen, giving opportunities across the board? But then I also grapple with that dopamine hit I get from seeing the remaining original Ghostbusters together on screen together, right? So, you know, we can contain multitudes. Now, this is the sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which picks up from the original Ghostbusters group of films. I am someone who likes the female reboot, but we're not going to go into that here. But, you know I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife. Like, factually, I know it. Could I tell you almost anything that happens in it? Probably not. I could tell. There are bits and pieces. Now, was I able to pick up Frozen Empire without needing to know the nitty-gritty of the previous one? Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't remember the previous one, you're going to be fine. What I do remember and what this film reestablishes is that Carrie Coon plays the daughter of Spangler, and then she has her two kids, played by Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace. McKenna Grace plays the Phoebe Spangler. She's, you know, more like her grandfather. She's a genius, et cetera, et cetera. But also a moody teen. You know, I give Finn Wolfhard credit. He plays kind of like a himbo-y character here, which is fun. And then Carrie Coon's character in the last film met Paul Rudd, who was, I think, the science teacher of the kids. Paul Rudd, always a delight. And he, you know, nothing against him for being in this. Nothing against anybody for participating in this, because if someone came to me and said, hey, do you want to be in a Ghostbusters film? We're doing another one. I'd be like, yeah, of course I do. You know? So no shade to any of them. They are rejoined by Celeste O'Connor, who was in the last film, and Logan Kim. So, you know, minor parts, but, you know, it's kind of fun to at least not have written them out. Kumail Nanjiani, Patton Oswalt, James Acaster, who's a British comedian, and then Emily Allen Lind are all additions to this new film. You know, I think the comedians are good choices, but I think they kind of sometimes can provide like distracting storylines. There are too many storylines in this for something that is ultimately about just busting ghosts, right? And then let's get down to why you're here to see this film. You know, it is no longer a hidden possible cameo type thing. It is just blatantly there. The original remaining Ghostbusters are back, also joined by Annie Potts' Janine Melnitz, who played the receptionist in the other films. And it is a delight to see her get, you know, her dues in this. So almost for that alone, I want to support this. So, you know, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, all back. Dan Aykroyd in this in particular, it was just so silly, because if you want a little bit of a giggle, like, Google Dan Aykroyd's beliefs in the supernatural, extraterrestrial, et cetera, and then when you see them kind of mirrored in this film, it's a funny moment. I acknowledge that I laughed at several points during this. I definitely groaned in I don't know if it's frustration or just kind of like, okay, we've seen this before. The VFX are questionable in this. And I'm like, we have made how many of these now? Like, shouldn't we have this down pat? The story gets, the core of the story is, I'm sorry, I don't think this is a spoiler. The core of the story is every Ghostbusters film we've seen so far, right? We're busting ghosts. I think there is a reliance on the nostalgia factor for it that, you know, it's a crutch kind of for them. They're also like, afraid that they don't have anything cute. So if you saw the last one, you know, they utilize these mini Stay Puffed marshmallows that feel like a aggressive merchandising play. There's also a almost queer storyline, which I look at the reaction to the female version of the Ghostbusters and I'm just like, well, wait till you see this. But they don't quite go there, which was disappointing for me. But yeah, so I am gonna say, you know, if you're a huge Ghostbusters fan, I think you'll have a fine time at this. You know, I don't think it's egregiously out of sorts. And, you know, it is in keeping with the traditions of all these films. I do think that the comedy moments between the characters who you love are good. I think, you know, Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon have some good comedy moments together. Finn Wolfhard does. Kumail and Patton are great comedians themselves. You know, James Acaster's playing more of a serious role here, but he's there. So should you see this film? If you are a hardcore Ghostbusters fan, sure, have a great time. If you are not, oh my God, absolutely not. If this is your first experience with the Ghostbusters, yeah, you could just plug into this, but it wouldn't make any sense at all. I mean, it would make sense, but you'd be like, why do people like this? So for what it is, and for the experience I had, and, you know, again, acknowledging that I saw it with a friend who's also a huge Ghostbusters fan, and we would, like, rib each other when some, you know, little Easter egg or cameo came on. And the thing about this is, like, I think the original Ghostbusters, I will fully admit, and I'm a huge scaredy cat, and we'll get into that with some of the later films this week, but, you know, I was scared by those. This one, not so much. And I don't think this is a spoiler either, but I will say one of the ghosts, I just have to say it out loud, looks like Diablo on Ozempic. And I was just like, this is not scary. Like, there are a couple ghosts I was like, oh, this might haunt my dreams. But, you know, I don't think they are willing to. The thing I like about the first one is that it does strike this balance of like, yeah, it's a comedy, but it is also kind of a scary movie. And it you know, meshes those two genres really well. I think they are so afraid now to do anything that is not, like, commercially viable, as evidenced by the muting of any sort of non-heteronormative storyline, of the reliance on cutesy characters, of, you know, not even having faith in the new characters, of having to bring back the old cast. All of these things, I'm just like, have faith in your ability to tell a fresh story, or start just, don't go to the Ghostbusters tent. But I am digressing. Like I said, if you are a Ghostbusters fan, this is fine. Have fun. Know it is what it is. I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5. If you are not a Ghostbusters fan, this is not the one to start with. Please just watch the original. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back. And I'm back. The next film I have is the 2024 version of Roadhouse. And much like Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I have to go, do we need this? I don't think the answer is yes. However, did I have a shockingly good time watching this film? That answer is also yes. I was not expecting to enjoy this film. You know, when I heard that they are making remaking a film called Roadhouse, you know, I love the Patrick Swayze version. It's camp classic in some senses, you know, a cult classic, but it's also kind of camp, let's be honest here. You know, the just absurdity of that character is amazing. This one is certainly following the template of that one. I do think it makes some changes, and part of me is just like, could we have, you know, changed this a little bit and just called it something different? And I think it could have had legs if they did that, but they did not have faith. You know, a similar problem with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. There's just like a lack of faith in new IP. So they're like, we'll call it Roadhouse. Jake Gyllenhaal plays Dalton, who's like a retired MMA UFC fighter. He's the Patrick Swayze-esque character. And if you've seen John Mulaney in The Sack Lunch Bunch, which is a Netflix comedy special, Jake Gyllenhaal has a moment in it. He has like a bit where he plays a character called Mr. Music, who's this like unhinged, very vibrant, like, you know, almost overly joyous character. I realized maybe a third or two-thirds of the way through the movie, these are the vibes I got from this character. So it is not necessarily like the self-serious level that Swayze is bringing to the role. And I think it's okay, because I like that he's doing something different with it, right? So same premise as the original one. Gets hired as a bouncer at this club that, you know, is full of, I don't know, degenerates who really like fighting, and he's there to kind of scare them off. He heads to the Florida Keys, and then there's this whole additional, you know, larger crime subplot. The rest of the cast is rounded out by Daniela Melchior, Billy Magnussen, Jessica Williams, Lucas Gage, Arturo Castro, Darren Barnett, and then my favorite casting in this is Conor McGregor as like a, you know, enforcer hitman-y type, I don't know, fixer dude. Conor McGregor is also unhinged in this, and I don't know Conor McGregor. He might be a delightful human being, but I got the vibe he was probably a menace on set. You know, his acting abilities are within a very specific range, but I laughed so hard at some of the scenes between him and Jake Gyllenhaal. And I think I was meant to laugh. Like, it feels like there were a lot of punch-up moments where they're like, I don't know, man, if we can't get Conor to do this, we'll rely on Jake to do this instead. I had a good time watching this film. I am borderline embarrassed to admit it, but if you just go into it knowing that it is going to be, one, not the original Roadhouse, like, don't just let it be its own thing, you know, as hard as it is to do. And then that, you know, it's just, like, silly, even though it's not trying to be. There are times where I think it manages to walk this line of silly without being like wink wink nudge nudge, like look how fun we're being, and I think that's hard to do, so I will give credit where credit is due. Does it get a little bogged down in like the violence and some of the additional plot points? Yeah, absolutely. If you like UFC, if you like fighting, you know, I thought some of the fighting was pretty good, but it just goes on for a little long. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is good in this. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is a great actor. I think, you know, most people agree Jake Gyllenhaal is a pretty great actor. So I like seeing him in roles like this where, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, you take yourself clearly very seriously, but this role is allowing you to express like a spectrum of things. Yeah. This is not Shakespeare. I don't think this will replace the original Roadhouse as in people's hearts, but I think it's a fun time. It's out on Amazon Prime, so if you already have it, like, you can watch it at home. I am going to give this, for what it is, a 4 out of 5. The next film I have is called Immaculate, and I will say this is a very not in my genre wheelhouse film to have watched. It stars Sydney Sweeney, who also produced it, as a nun initiate in an Italian convent that is scary, and then things happen to her. And, you know, with horror films, I don't want to spoil the plot because that's part of the mystery, et cetera, et cetera. But I think one of the first things you have to ask yourself is, like, would I ever believe Sydney Sweeney as a nun? I actually think Sydney does, like, a decent job in this. It is certainly a challenging thing to wrap your head around, especially given, like, the other types of roles that she has taken in the past and just sort of how she presents herself. But I don't want to hold that against her. And I think she's fine in this. I think, you know, when you are a producer of a film, it's hard to allow, like, objectivity with the cutting. And some of it feels, like, a little self-indulgent. And they know that she is the reason that people are going to go see this. So I understand what they're doing, but I you know, I don't think it always works. There is, like, the core premise and scary thing in this film I actually think could be really clever, right? Because I think this could be a really good commentary on, you know, the atrocities of organized religion and the Catholic Church in particular, or, you know, female autonomy and, like, body autonomy and all of these things. But instead, this film gets really reliant on jump scares and, you know, that type of horror, and it's, like, super front-loaded in that. And I was just like, by the time we got to the maybe more interesting type stuff happening, I was like, oh, this could have been scarier if you'd had faith in this concept versus just being like, wooky spooky. And maybe this is just me speaking as somebody who does not enjoy the genre, because I don't enjoy it because I don't like being scared. And this film was neither scary enough for me to respect it being like, wow, that scared the living bejesus out of me, or silly fun campy enough for me to be like, well, that was fun. But, you know, it also, thankfully, knock on wood, it did not keep me up at night. So it just didn't. It didn't do it for me in any department, right? And I'm like, oh, that's kind of a bummer. Because, like I said, there is this weird, very buried storyline that could have worked out well. The rest of the cast might not be folks you've heard of, mostly Italian people. I think the most recognizable other person in it is Simona Tabasco from The White Lotus second season. There are also some really gross scenes in this that I legitimately almost threw up during. Like, you know, and I'm like, okay, mission accomplished. And actually, some of those scenes I was like, oh, you know, if you had waited and not tried to, you know, jump scare me and waited for this, I would have respected this film more for being like, oh, this is coming out of nowhere. Like, they've set it up properly. But yeah, I might be in a minority in this. I fully acknowledge, like, I am not a scary movie person, but I don't think this is going to do it for folks who want to get really scared, because it's not that, because I was, again, able to sleep afterwards. You know, if you are a Sydney Sweeney super fan, I will acknowledge that, like, yes, she's playing a nun in it, but she's still got that body in it, and her shows off her assets in a way, in a not sexual way, but they're still there, which I was like, I felt kind of sad, because I just kept thinking they felt like they had to rely on that as well in order to draw audiences in. But yeah, it was not for me. It was not for me. And I don't think it'll be for hardcore horror fans either. And I don't think people who are casual horror fans, I mean, maybe they'll consider it, but I'm going to suggest you do not. So I'm going to give it a 2.6 out of 5. The next film I have is called Late Night with the Devil. And again, a very uncharacteristic week for me, because this is two horror movies in one week. And I don't like horror movies, because I like being able to sleep at night because my imagination is too overactive. But I thought this was intriguing, and so I gave it a shot. And I also have to caveat, I know that this and Roadhouse both have accusations and or admissions of having used a bit of AI in them, which I do not condone in any way, shape, or form. But I still, you know, I don't think, especially with Late Night with the Devil, like apparently they used it to generate a couple of like interstitial stills. I'm not supporting this behavior, but I'm going to try and take that part out of it as I review the film, because I didn't know until after I saw the film and I was like, oh, that's such a bummer. But we're going to, you know, it's a separate discussion that requires more conversation. So the premise behind Late Night with the Devil is that David Dasmalchian, who I'm so sorry if I've said your name wrong, but he plays a late night host in, I want to say, like the 70s, late 70s. You know, so peak of there's only a few networks out there. Like, it's Johnny Carson era. They name check Johnny Carson. But the idea is that he is a competitor to him and becomes obsessed with trying to become number one and like ratings hungry and all these things. And it is a funny kind of thing, because as someone who has ties to the industry and is aware of how a lot of that stuff works, I was like, oh yeah, of course this makes sense. But they do have to end up explaining it for a broader audience in it. I was like, this is very meta in many senses. But you know, I think they do a good job about it. I think it does such a good job of capturing kind of the vibe of the late 70s and also just like late night talk show cheesiness. You know, I think David does such a good job of embodying this host who's trying his best to like trying to do his own shtick, and the rapport between him and his kind of band leader slash sidekicky character. I don't know, but you know, it's basically his. I kept mapping this to more modern folks who are hosts. I was like, oh, he's the Andy Richter to the Conan O'Brien, right? In a bid for, you know, rating supremacy, he decides to bring on this researcher and a girl who basically can channel a demon and, you know, speak to this demon on live television on Halloween. And then you can imagine what happens, right? It's a scary movie, and you know, much like Immaculate, does rely on a lot of the tropes of this genre. However, I think the thing I liked about this is like it wasn't overly going with it. There are moments that felt a little over the top and not in like a fun B movie way. You know, I think some of the actors are stronger than others. I think, again, David is like absolutely the reason to go see this movie. Their ability to encapsulate the spirit of late night gimmick and things like that is really well conveyed. I was able to sleep after seeing this movie as well. I did make a point to watch it like in the morning, so I had time to decompress. So it's not the scariest thing you've ever seen, but I don't think it's trying to be, which is, you know, what's important to note here. Like, I think it knows where the scare is going to come from or where the genre will enhance it. So see it for his performance alone. I will say there's plenty of things that I would maybe have notes on, but for what it is, I found it shockingly enjoyable for me. I'm going to give it a 3.7 out of 5. The last thing I have this week is a new series out on Apple TV Plus called Palm Royale, and I got access to this show last year and I became obsessed with it, and I have been waiting for other people to be able to see it. So I am so, so happy that it is now out in the world and I can actually talk about it. It stars Kristen Wiig as this character called Maxine Simmons, and this is also a Florida-based film. She moves to Florida. This takes place in 1969. So like the fashion is fabulous and fun. The set designs are also amazing. But anyway, Kristen Wiig plays this character who moves to Palm Beach and is just obsessed with the women there and wants to, I mean, effectively social climb and integrate into their society. Basically, what it feels like to me is like watching a more dramatic and better acted Real Housewives with slightly more bonkers, but also somehow more grounded plot lines. And I was here for it. Also, the cast for the show is truly wild. So not only do you have Laura Dern, you also have Bruce Dern in it, which is so lovely to see them together. You have Josh Lucas, Leslie Bibb, Amber Shardy Robinson, Kaya Gerber, and then you also have Ricky Martin, Allison Janney, and the legendary Carol Burnett. I mean, I would watch this show for Carol Burnett in it alone. She plays, you know, this like matriarch of the town, etc. society, and she's so good in it. And there are, you know, not to spoil a ton, but there are like some episodes where she can't even talk, but she just emotes. And she is a comedy legend. She still absolutely got it. Like, she is Carol Burnett. And it is such a joy to see. Now, it makes me sad because other people have not responded to the show as well as I have. But I think if you watch a trailer and you're like, this is for me, this show is absolutely for you. You are going to become obsessed with it. If you watch a trailer and you're like, not so much, no, you're not going to like the show. I do think, you know, it's pretty upfront with what it is going to be. You know, it is billed as a drama. I don't know why, but it is mostly comedic. It is hyperbolic drama that I think all of us who are reality TV fans and like that specific genre of Housewives and that type of thing, this will scratch the same itch for you, but it is also like beautifully produced and scripted slightly better. Although let's not lie, I'm not knocking the reality shows like a Real Housewives because sometimes those give you unexpected things, but the caliber of acting in this and just, you know, the storylines, the twists, the turns, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Palm Royale, the first three episodes are out now and then it's going to start streaming weekly. That has been it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a review, or even consider subscribing.